Hey guys, I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast that I know you're going to love. Do you like travel? Do you like picturesque locations and getting away from it all? Well, this new podcast has all that and murder. It's called Slaycation, and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that took place on vacation. Hosted by a true crime fanatic, her comedy writer husband, and his TV producing partner, Slaycation brings a unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, and WTF stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, two recently engaged lovebirds whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended underwater. Each episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that'll intrigue you. It's the discussion between a longtime married couple and business partners who happen to be Emmy-nominated TV producers. Each episode of Slaycation also includes humor, takeaway and travel tips that will keep your next vacation from being your last. If you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, one strange thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real. And just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Today's list is inspired by my personal admiration for a woman named Megan Good, who single-handedly runs a website called The Charlie Project, which is a website that profiles over 15,000 cold cases of missing people, mainly from the U.S. I only became aware of her site recently, but find it fascinating and helpful what she does over there. And interestingly, she says that if it weren't for herself being on the autism spectrum, there's no way she would be able to maintain the site. She has a lot of cases you've never heard about, which brings a lot of hope to many people. And today, we're showcasing five stories from there. Here are five Charlie Project missing persons cases. Number 5, Lori C.C. Bova. Lori C.C. Bova's disappearance is one of the many mysterious vanishings of young women you'll find over on the Charlie Project. It's a case that has remained unsolved for decades, and yet her family still holds out hope in finding her. Lori was born on November 2nd of 1970. By 1997, the 26-year-old was living in Lakewood, New York with her husband, Tyrone Bova. Lakewood is located all the way in the western part of the state, very close to Lake Erie. At the time of her disappearance, she was working at a Red Lobster in Jamestown, which is the next town over. And she was a happy-go-lucky type of lady, kind and very close to her family, which is why on the night of June 7th of 97, her sudden absence left her loved ones in a state of shock, struggling to piece together what could have possibly happened to her. On the evening in question, Lori and Tyrone reportedly had dinner at a local restaurant. According to her husband, they returned home where an argument that had been brewing out in public overflowed in the privacy where they could say how they really felt. After that, Lori decided to take a walk to cool off, and simply, she never returned. No one knows where she went or what happened. She was reported missing the next day, and at the time of her disappearance, was described as being approximately 5 feet 4 inches tall, weighing around 110 pounds with brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a black dress and sandals. The investigation into her disappearance has been fraught with challenges from the beginning. Despite extensive searches of the area, interviews with potential witnesses, and numerous public appeals for info, no substantial evidence has been found that could explain what happened to Lori. And Tyrone was, of course, initially considered a person of interest, primarily due to the nature of their last known interaction. However, no evidence ever emerged to conclusively link him or anyone else to her disappearance. Over the years, the case has seen several developments, including unconfirmed sightings and the discovery of two sets of remains in the region, which led to speculation and hope for a breakthrough. Yet none of these leads have resulted in any significant progress. The dental records were never a match. Lori's family, particularly her sister, has been vocal in seeking justice for Lori and maintaining a presence in the media and online to keep her case in the public eye, and that's true to this day, 27 years since it happened. The lack of concrete evidence in Bova's case has led to various theories and speculations. Her case is officially labeled as missing under mysterious circumstances. It's widely believed she likely was met with foul play, but some say she may have chosen to get out of her relationship and her responsibilities altogether, choosing to leave on her own accord and start up again somewhere new. However, those who knew Lori best assert that she would not have voluntarily disappeared in any way, shape, or form, especially without contacting her family. Expectedly, because of how close they were, Bova's disappearance has had a profound impact on her family, who have spent decades seeking answers and justice. The case has also resonated within the community and among those who follow unsolved cases, highlighting the enduring pain and uncertainty that comes with the disappearance of a loved one. Number 4, Erica Lee Frazier. Erica Lee Frazier's disappearance is another haunting mystery of a young woman, this time just 17 years old, that once again up and vanished and no one knows how or why. She was a regular middle American girl in Brooksville, Kentucky, which is why it's so disturbing, because her story feels like it could happen to anyone's daughter, sister, or loved one. Erica was a senior at Bracken County High School. She was last seen on the evening of Tuesday, October 21st of 1997. She had spent the day with friends. By all accounts, it was a typical afternoon for the teen with no signs of anything she was bothered by. And that night, Erica and a female friend drove around Brooksville to kill some time, just looking to see what was happening around town. According to reports, Erica and her friend pulled up to a group of other friends they knew casually. They were a bit older and had been bar hopping around town. One of the people in the group was 20-year-old Shane Simcox, a kid who had been expelled from high school for threats he gave to a teacher and her daughter. 2 years prior, he did a little stint in jail for burglary, so he was a bit of a bad boy, which maybe Erica found attractive. Erica's friend got out of the car so Shane and her could drive around a bit. The following morning, when Erica's mom realized she had never come back the night before, she called the police to report her missing. The initial search was pretty extensive. There's not a ton of crime in that area, and after talking with friends and figuring out no one knew where she was, the police, along with many volunteers from not just Brooksville, but the surrounding towns, combed the area. And that's when the real sign that something had gone terribly wrong showed up. Erica's car, a black 1988 Pontiac Bonneville, was found abandoned on a remote country road just a few miles outside Brooksville. The car contained her purse with her ID and money still inside, but there was no sign of Erica herself. The keys to the car were missing, though those would later be found in a field across the street under some brush. There were no fingerprints, signs of a struggle, or foreign hairs in her car, so what happened to her, no one knew for sure. Shane was interviewed. He said that they only drove around for 10 or 15 minutes before she dropped him off at around 9 p.m. at his step-grandfather's house.
That was the last time I seen him.
In the end, even though he was certainly a person of interest, without any sign of Erica, it was tough to pin anything on Shane. Despite extensive searches, interviews, and public appeals, no significant leads have ever emerged. And currently the case of Erica remains open, with law enforcement expressing their commitment to finding answers. Advances in forensic technology and new investigative techniques have provided hope that one day, the truth about what happened to her might be uncovered. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and other organizations like the Charlie Project continue to feature Erica's case, reminding the public that her family still seeks closure. Unfortunately, though, her parents will never get to know the truth, if it ever is revealed. Her mom passed away in 2012, and her dad in 2016. Number 3, the Ming Zhu. The future was bright for Deming Zhu. He had moved from China to the U.S. with his wife, Shi Zhu, in the late 1980s to become a mathematics professor at the University of Oregon. The location was a perfect fit for them. They loved the outdoors, so the wilderness out in the Northwest was full of weekend getaways and opportunities to walk different trails. Deming, at 63 years old, was fit for his age and experience with hiking and navigating trail maps in 2007, which is why, when on a beautiful fall day that year, when he went out to check out a relatively mundane mountain and didn't return, it didn't make any sense. On November 4th, 2007, Deming headed out solo to the Three Sisters Wilderness area in Oregon. On this day, the weather was clear and calm, and the sun was out. From the parking lot, it was about a 2.5 mile walk up to the top of the Olalley Mountain along the Olalley Trail. Halfway through, there is a fork, and you can either go right and head to the peak or continue left, and this walk takes you more around the base of the mountain. At around 1:30 p.m., another couple hiking saw Deming at the peak of Olalley Mountain, so we know he at least made it up. He stayed for just a few moments, dressed in a light jacket and a little gear. After all, he wasn't planning on staying out there long, and then he headed back down. When the couple returned to the parking lot, and they saw Deming's Chevy Impala sitting there, only they didn't know it was his. But he should have been back by now, since he left before them, and they didn't pass him. And this would be important information later on. The following day, when he still hadn't returned home, his wife called the authorities and the search effort was on. It was extensive, involving over 60 mountain rescue personnel, various county sheriff's officials, police from Eugene, and the use of a UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter. Volunteers helped look as well, but still, nobody could find any sign of him. Inside his Chevy truck, which was still parked, they discovered some heavier clothing, water, and half a hiking guidebook, so it didn't seem like he'd been back there. And since his truck was still there when that couple came back, it was assumed that at the fork, halfway down the mountain, he likely could have turned right, which would have taken him along the base of the mountain, though away from the parking lot. And this trail was only a mile long before it ended, so even if he had gone this way unintentionally, he could have turned around and gotten back to the parking lot fairly easily. But being an avid hiker, maybe he wanted to go over there to see what it looked like. And it appeared he did in fact go this route, as a little over a week after he disappeared, the other half of that trail book was found. And this half had the maps of the Olalley trails in it, so he knew where he was. Tracking dogs followed his scent through the meadow over there until they abruptly stopped. No other sign of Deming was ever found. After 15,000 man-hours searching over the course of around a week, the challenging weather conditions, including dropping temperatures, rain, fog, and snow, it all forced the rescuers to cut the search operation short. On a few nights, the temperatures dropped below freezing as well, and dressed as he was, it was unlikely Deming could have survived the elements if in fact he were still alive out there. And so, by all accounts, it appears that in one way or another, despite the weather being nice, Demang ran into some real trouble. Perhaps he was exploring an area off a trail when he injured himself. And there are black bears in that area too, though they don't tend to attack humans unless they are starving. Before hibernation, they do need to store up enough fat to get them through, and in the Northwest, they tend to den down beginning in November through March. And so, it is possible that Demang crossed paths with a desperate bear who chased him into some unknown area before taking him down. Number 2, William Marlin Bynum. After a night out on the town in Big Springs, Texas, the 40-year-old William Arlen Bynum vanished under circumstances that immediately raised concerns among his family, friends, and law enforcement. And to this day, it's one of the very few remaining unsolved mysteries in that area, and it might be time to take a fresh look at some of the evidence to see if this case can finally be put to bed. It was August 15th of 2003. Downtown Big Springs was bumping with energy, at least as much as a town that size can. Bynum was at the San Franciscan Bar and Grill on 3rd Street, the type of place that has a big wooden bar, karaoke, and prime rib as the go-to dish. The night was fairly uneventful. At around 2 a.m., Bynum left with a man and was simply never seen again. Bynum, who was gay, was never fully comfortable being that way. In fact, he was ashamed. He even asked his mom one time, "Why did it have to be me?" To which she had no response. And perhaps as a way to compensate for the pain, Bynum was known to like to go out and party a bit, which is why it is believed that it's possible his disappearance was drug-related. Either he owed money to someone, or that man who picked him up was offering something and a deal went sideways. It's also been speculated that perhaps this was a hate crime, just a good old boy down in Texas who wanted to do his part to straighten out the world. In the days after his disappearance, while police searched for clues, his mom Deanna went to every single bar talking to people, but no one had any information to give. In a small town like this one, though, she finds that hard to believe, and so, to this day, her and her family are still trying to find answers. Several people, acquaintances of Bynum, were brought in to take polygraphs about the night in question, and there were two unnamed individuals who failed. However, it's not believed they committed the crime, but possibly knew what happened and weren't sharing it. Regardless, though, without a body, it's hard to pin this crime, if there even is one, on anyone specific. After all, it's possible that Bynum just left on his own accord, though not many people think that to be the case. Someone would need to come forward out of the blue and confess to doing something harmful to the man in order for this case to move forward. The chances of that, especially 20 years on, is unlikely. For some time, authorities had reason to believe that Bynum had been killed and disposed of in a well somewhere. Despite searching everyone they could find in the area, there was no sign of the man. Don Williams, who worked the case for 5 years, says he thinks Bynum is buried somewhere. Otherwise, if he were just dumped, then hunters, hikers, or whoever would have found some sort of remains by now. His family thinks it's time to take a fresh look at the case and talk to those who are under suspicion again, the ones who failed their polygraphs, to see if they can knock loose any new information. But whether or not that is in the plans is yet to be decided officially. Number 1, Melissa Lee Brannan. Melissa Lee Brannan was 5 years old when she vanished on December 3rd of 1989, marking a case that has since remained one of the most unsettling missing persons incidents in Virginia's history. Her disappearance from a Christmas party held at the Woodside Apartments, a community in Lorton, Virginia, where she lived with her mother, sparked a massive search and an extensive investigation. Despite the efforts of law enforcement and the community, Melissa has never been found, but That doesn't mean someone wasn't charged for the crime, though I'm not sure they got exactly what they deserved. On the evening of her disappearance, Melissa was attending the apartment complex's holiday party with her mother, Tammy. This party was a festive gathering, bringing together residents to celebrate the season, and there was around 100 guests in attendance. And kids were playing, having fun, parents drinking, and as the night wore on, it was time to head home. It was a little before 10 p.m., and Tammy grabbed her daughter's hand, and as they were headed out, Melissa, still full of energy from all the fun, asked if she could go grab a bag of chips before they left. And so Tammy let her go to grab them and come right back. In those critical moments that followed, when momentarily Tammy lost sight of her girl, Melissa then vanished. There were so many people at that party to talk to that the investigation quickly began to focus on a man who had been present, 23-year-old Caleb Hughes. Hughes, who was employed as a groundskeeper at the apartment complex, became a person of interest due to several factors, including his crude remarks to several women in attendance, giving a lot of attention to several of the kids there all night, including Melissa, and his abrupt departure from the party shortly after she was last seen. Police headed over to his apartment where he lived with his wife at around 1 a.m. to find the two at home. When asked where he had been, his wife told them that Caleb had gotten home around 30 minutes ago. And they asked him where he was for the past 2.5 hours since he left the party. Caleb said he had gone out to buy some beers and then took the long way home. The washing machine was running, which 1 a.m. and doing laundry stood out to the officers as being a bit odd. Inside, they found all of Caleb's clothes from the party, as well as his belt with a large knife sheet on it, and also his shoes that had pieces of the sole cut off of them. Say if there was something like blood on them that he wanted to carve out. The police then seized his Honda Civic and pulled fibers from it. And Melissa had been wearing a Big Bird sweater that was from JCPenney that night, so they bought the same one from the store and compared fibers found in the passenger seat, and they matched. They also discovered hairs from a rabbit fur coat, the same as the one Tammy had worn out to the party, meaning Melissa hugged her mom, got the furs on her, and then sat in the car. No body was ever found, and so officially Melissa is still missing. In Virginia, you can convict a person for murder without a body, but you have to be able to prove where the body should be, which authorities couldn't. As a result, Caleb was sentenced to 50 years behind bars, but here's the messed up part. After serving 29, he was let out of jail for good behavior in 2019, at the age of 53. And so, ever since then, he's been able to roam free and enjoy the rest of his life, which, by all accounts, there's plenty left to live. So there were 5 Charlie Project missing persons cases. If you liked this video, go check out the Charlie Project's webpage and consider supporting the work that Megan does. We really appreciate you tuning in today. And remember to check us out on Patreon if you want more podcasts from us, where we dig into some even more disturbing cases. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe out there. I'll see you guys in the next one.